Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 4, Episode 4, Chapter 4, titled Dear Billy. Aaron, what did you think of this episode?
I actually liked it. I think people might have fairly gotten the impression that I was getting a little antsy with some stuff in the last episode. I was like, how are they going to make this Victor Creel thing pay off? You know, what we know of the Hawkins history, how we know the upside down works, the timeline of L ripping a hole between our dimensions. Like, it doesn't seem to add up. And here is Steve in this episode essentially being Aaron from episode 3's podcast saying, none of this shit adds up. This thing can't work for all the reasons. So I'm like, okay, the Duffer brothers cease something. And I also was thinking about ready to be like, man, if they bust, Hopper out of the super secret Soviet prison camp and like 3.5 episodes, is that really going to be cool? And it turns out there's a big old complication with that. So I thought that maybe the Duffer brothers were kind of checking their brains out, and I guess that's still on the table, but they're telling me that they haven't. They're telling me they'll be patient and wait for another 90 minutes of television and all will be revealed. And I thought some of the emotional stuff that they're doing, again, with these young kids is working surprisingly well. So, what'd you think, Jim?
I've always really appreciated that about Stranger Things, right? That as soon as we have a question, the show knows we have a question. And I remember this being a thing, like, you know, what's going on here? And then they'll have a character ask basically the exact same question, which tells you they've thought of that. And so it lets you kind of settle into the show a little bit easier. That was really nice to see. Here's the thing. I do feel like these episodes are a little too long. I am starting to feel that they're losing like the breezy pulp that they like pulp feeling they used to have. And they're leaning more into like prestige territory. And I don't know that that's working for me on this particular show. It's not like a fatal flaw or anything. I'm just starting to be like, oh boy, these episodes feel pretty long. I'm not sure I always need them to be that long.
Let me ask you a couple of follow-ups, because like, I think this is taking the arc that a lot of shows do, you know, or a lot of series that start off like lighthearted, like The Hobbit or even Breaking Bad. And as you get more into the characters, into the, you know, the situation, the action keeps rising and the danger keeps escalating, necessarily things become less whimsical, less humor, you know, goes from humor to black humor to hardly any humor at all. Do you think we're just seeing that? And is this acutely felt because this was just, you know, like Goonies, like what does a dark version of the Goonies look like? It's just not sustaining the narrative weight it's having to. And then the other question I have is like, what are the parts you feel like are dragging? Because I'm kind of feeling the same, but I'm having a hard time pointing out like scenes where I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is going on forever.
Yeah, I feel the same thing. It just doesn't feel, like I said, as breezy. You know, I came to Stranger Things being really excited about how much fun it was, and you know how well they told their story. And I feel like this season is less fun, which can be okay. You know, as you said, a lot of shows do this as they round the corner to the end. Which, hey, this is not the end of this show. And also, like, yeah, they're telling a darker story here. It's just kind of, I'm with you. Like, I can't put my finger on which scenes need to go. And I kind of like what they're doing, but at the same time, I do find myself during these episodes kind of looking at my watch going, man, this is a long episode, you know?
I think I'm more of I think I feel like I'm borrowing trouble. Like when I have these feelings, it's like I look down and I know that in 2 months we've got essentially two episodes that are going to be 5 hours long total.
Yeah, long.
And I look at like the fact that we got like an hour 40 minute, I think, at the end of the session tomorrow. And it's more of like, oh, my God, what if this stuff just doesn't come together more than it's actually not coming together? It's more of like I'm worried that it's not going to. And I also think that now that I'm thinking about it, there is this like my relief of like, OK, they're not going to just bust Hopper out of the super secret, you know, extra dimensional Soviet prison or whatever. They're not going to break him out that easy. This exchange is not going to go super smooth. But on the other hand, I felt like Robin and Nancy's plot was super farcical. Like the fact that they just breezed into this Notre Dame research facility and bullshit their way. And the guy's just like, oh, why not? I'm feeling I felt like that was borderline kind of out of control and not sad. So it's like, as I'm praising them for like being aware of some plot holes and stuff, it does feel like they're trying to keep that breezy kind of like borderline childhood. Yeah. Like when Dustin browbeats the librarian in a middle school into giving him some information he probably shouldn't have, like you kind of go with that because it's Dusty and it's a Hawkins middle school and what the hell anyway. But like when it's the director of a prestigious university's mental health or, you know, like asylum, two teenagers coming in with falsified records and just and Robin word salading her way towards, you know, victory felt a little out of like you said, it's trying to do the fun stuff that Stranger Things used to do, but in a much more adult, serious situation. And it didn't work as well for me.
And I think they're spending the same amount of time. Like you could have got through this Hopper stuff way faster. They could have already had Hopper, you know, try to bust out like an episode ago. At least we didn't need to see him, you know, take the chains off once and rub his poor feet. Right. We could have just.
I'm not even sure why he tried to do. Yeah, like what? Yeah.
And he was just testing. Can I do this? Can I get these things off? But like, we don't need to see that, right? We just need him to know that, okay, I bent this thing enough, and then go for it. Like, there's a lot of just sort of taking its time on those scenes in particular that I'm like, okay, this is not bad. It's just it's taking more time than it usually does, and scenes like.
Especially since it's literally undone by the end of the episode. Like all the stuff with the chains, the snowmobile escape, all that thrilling stuff is erased by the time. Like, so like our three episode investment in this arc has kind of been for nothing, which is fine. You can do that to an audience, but it does feel a little rug pull. Yeah,
it does, especially when you're spending so much time on it. I think the stuff with Yuri could have been sped up a little bit too. I don't know that we needed four jokes of him, you know, pulling their leg. Maybe you could do it once. I feel like that's the thing that's changed, right? Stranger Things is going for a little bit more repetition than it used to. It used to hit a joke and get out of a scene, right? And now it's kind of just lingering a bit in those scenes, and I think that's what's adding to the runtime without actually adding to the feeling of like this is more substantial Stranger Things.
And I think it's maybe a little bit of playing, replaying the hits. Like, oh, we had so much funny with Murray and the crazy Russian. Right. Let's have another crazy Russian, you know, with the upper hand over Murray kind of, you know, kind of like call back. And I think this double crossing Yuri guy is going to continue to be a big part of it. Like, right?
Possibly.
Because they're still in Alaska. They're not even in Russia. You need someone to get them there off the books. Like, are you going to have enough? I know we've got like hours and hours. We almost have a whole season of television still ahead of us because of the extended run times.
Right.
But can you really like introduce another black market, you know, air pirate? So
not to say it's bad. It's just, it's taking longer than Stranger Things usually does and making it feel less breezy to me.
But I'm starting to feel like we're the old guys in the Muppets where we start off like, oh, this episode's pretty good. It's not bad, except for it was kind of terrible. Yeah, it's like we're talking ourselves into.
Absolutely not. I really enjoyed this episode. There's a lot to like about it. It's just, you know, it feels different.
I feel like that's a lot of this was like me being pre-gripped up before the season. Like we talked about this in the first podcast. Like, oh, my God, it's been so long. These kids are going to be so old now. Like, is this that they've missed their moment? The pandemic, like, they got this out 2 years ago. That, you know, but they've missed their moment. And the first three episodes essentially kind of like dispelling that. But I don't know, like maybe there is still some of that worry that's still kind of holding, because I don't want to get to the end of Stranger Things and not like the ending. I don't want another Game of Thrones because I've loved the early stages so well. And I also, there's a conventional wisdom that Stranger Things hasn't been good since season one. And I violently reject that. Like,
yeah, I do too. I've really enjoyed all of Stranger Things. I can see why some people might be tired of it, but that's not me.
I don't understand. I'm still enjoying getting it. Tired of something that is still executing at a high level. You get tired of something when it falls off. But I can understand like it's been 3 years and you just like lost track and you don't have a Netflix account anymore. But like, yeah, I just can't imagine seeing three episodes of Stranger Things and having a Netflix account and not being like, you know what, I want to watch Stranger Things 4.
Sure. Would it surprise you to know this is not the final season?
These two chunks? No, I heard that there was going to be a fifth and final season. I was confused because the way they were talking about the final season and the extra long episodes, it made it seem like season four might have been the end. But it's my understanding that season four, there'll be one more. There'll be one more.
Okay. Yeah. I don't
know. Netflix.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to play out. I mean, Netflix usually cancels things after the second season, so this is like a longer run than any other.
This is one of the last franchises they have that still have like serious Q rating recognition kind of things. I don't know. I wonder if they'll do it also if we get to the end and it'll feel, because like I felt like almost every end of the Stranger Things franchise except for season three could have been the final. Mm-hmm. You know, like they got to like where season three, there was an obvious like Hopper is not dead. He's over. And like there's going to be more story. It'll be interesting to see if how they finish season four. If like Netflix, because they are hemorrhaging cash. This is a very expensive series, but an important one to them. I wonder if they don't get the response that like, is there a possibility that they might just cancel the fifth season?
I doubt it.
Yeah,
I doubt it. But we'll see.
Yeah, you're probably right. Okay, what do we want to get into for a deeper dive? Do you have anything else you want to say non-specifically or?
No, not non-specific. I do want to talk about some of these characters though.
I want to open with something light and breezy.
Okay.
I appreciated seeing Lucas's sister, Erica.
Uh-huh.
The SAS machine. I appreciated seeing her painting her mini under a giant magnifying light. I like, because I feel like as much as they've used D&D as like the core of this, that like the actual D&D kind of culture hasn't been as represented, and I like seeing the mini painting.
Yeah, it's cool. I wish we were seeing more of that stuff. Like I don't know. I'm trying to think back to previous seasons. There wasn't a ton of the kids playing D&D, right? It was kind of bookending season one.
It was always just the kind of like the book cover to get the like the flavor to get you into the Mind Flayer and the Demogorgon and setting up the stakes. But yeah.
They were always talking in terms of like, oh, this is the Demogorgon, right? And this is the monster we're battling, and putting it in context of the D&D monster manual or whatever. But like, they're still doing that this season. I think it just people, you know, forget every time they say Vecna, they're talking about D&D, right? That isn't literally this demon's name.
But it is. It's a lot of background flavoring. Bring it. And honestly, I really liked the way they intercut the championship and the final campaign session. Again, I feel like there's been more RPG elements this season than there has almost all the other seasons combined in terms of like, you know, talk. But maybe I'm wrong. I just think that I like seeing the kids play, and we haven't seen that as much in the last two seasons.
Right. I'm happy now that I got the reference they were going for with Steve McQueen, the Cooler King, when they're talking about Hopper here. Because I would not have gotten that a month ago or whenever we covered The Great Escape.
Dude, The Great Escape is referenced all the fucking time, and I just don't think I've ever noticed it. Because, like, the Cooler King, I would just assume that was just his nickname because he's so cool.
Uh-huh. And it's cold up there. You'd be like, oh, sure. Okay, whatever. But no, that's a Steve McQueen reference.
And also that you got to be better than Steve McQueen or else you go back. Because, like, Steve McQueen, as Queen, as cool as he was, went back to the cooler. Right? You don't want to end up in back in the cooler in a situation.
That's exactly what happened, though. He got Steve McQueened.
He got Steve McQueen. I wondered, like, when they talked about Steve McQueen and then Hopper takes off barefoot on a snowmobile. I was wondering if we were going to have, like, some kind of jaw-dropping mid-season effect, stunt-palooza. Like, he's going to be jumping barbed wire barriers and things. But, nah, it's pretty pedestrian in terms of...
Yeah.
Are they building... Hop has always been a larger-than-life presence on the show. But they're building him into, like, almost a mythical Paul Bunyan-esque quality, just in his pain stamina and his physical strength, the fact that he can ride in Russia barefoot on a snowmobile and not lose all of his toes. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of excited for them to, now that, you know, David Harbour's post-Hellboy, to just be like, you know what, we're going to make this guy a superhero.
Yeah, I could see it.
I want to see him bust Russian heads. And upside down Demogorgons with his bare hands. They're the size of boulders.
Yeah, I believe he could take a Demogorgon. Well, one.
Did you recognize the corrupt Russian guard?
You know, it's been in my head and I've been like, man, where have I seen this guy? Where have I seen Enzo before? Because I know I have. His face looks so familiar. And then I saw an email come in this morning.
Okay,
where the subject line clued me in. I was like, yes, of course.
I saw a couple Twitter messages from our coverage last week. It's Jack and Hagar. If you've been like, who is this oddly roguish, extremely handsome man who's guarding Hopper? It was Jack and Hagar, the faceless man from Game of Thrones. Yeah. Another big stunt casting. Mm-hmm. Robert Englund. Is it England? I should let you do this because you're the horror guy. He's Freddy Krueger.
He is. Yeah. I kind of expected that it might have been him under the Vecna makeup too, or the CG.
I did too.
I don't think it is, but I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't do that stuff anymore. But
I think it's David Harbour underneath that Vecna makeup still. But it's Robert Englund was playing Victor Creel.
Yes.
With his eyes. I haven't seen any of his I think I've seen a couple of his non-Freddy Krueger roles, but they've always been like stunt casting and stuff like Scary Movie or like a Star Trek episode or whatever. I was kind of surprised, like Victor Creel is a real ass role that has a lot of pathos and acting, crying, angst. I thought he did a really, really good job with it.
Yeah, that's a big loaf of a role to sink your teeth into. Yeah.
Broken old man tormented by the fact that he survived, by the fact that none of his family did, clearly traumatized by mistakes he made in World War II under fire. Holy shit. Also, this season of Stranger Things is horrific. The implication of the baby screaming like hysterically and the crib on fire and like him walking into that chalet that he bombed. I thought that stuff and the Max Nightmare mode was extremely disturbing material, even for like Stranger Things.
Yeah. I sort of expected us to get more answers there, to all of Steve's questions, right? Like how did this happen in the 50s? I thought it was L that ripped the hole open, and yes, but it's a very old, the Upside Down is very old. I guess I was waiting for more to come from this scene, but I assume we'll get that further down the line. Because the show knows those are the questions we're waiting for answers for.
They know that they've identified all the questions that they need to answer, which makes me feel good. I kind of like it with four episodes in of a 9-episode season that it's still very Lovecraftian. Like this guy that survives it doesn't even understand why. And like Robin and Nancy standing outside of his kind of a trauma and all of his post-traumatic stuff are able to identify elements and like bring it together, but he himself doesn't even know. It's just like, you know, like he survived glimpse in Cthulhu and has a sanity intact just barely, but doesn't even understand the fact that like he thinks an angel saved him. It's Ella Fitzgerald. I thought that was cool. And I like how they visualized, you know, Max in the Vecna's kind of like web of pain and despair, and this music essentially tears. It's not a panacea. It doesn't make it stop. It just tears a small hole where you can navigate through it back to the daylight if you're a strong enough character and you have enough people to support and love you.
Yeah, no, I kind of liked it. You know, there's always been this theme of friendship and how much stronger it makes them together. And you know, her flashbacks during that song playing connected the dots between like the music and the friendship and the protection that offers, right? I think thematically that was a really good scene, and visually it was a great scene too.
It felt almost like more of a season finale kind of moment, the way they built it up.
Kinda, yeah, for sure. I do. So I was sitting there and I'm watching Victor Creel give his speech or whatever, and I wish they had not spoiled the reveal of his eyes in the trailer. Well, I didn't know what had happened to his eyes. I thought they were like sewn shut or something based on the trailer, but they were not. They're just, he took razor blades to them, which to me has got to be the most nonsensical way to commit suicide I've ever heard of. Like, he's gonna cut his eyes, which will kill him somehow. How did he expect that to work? Because I don't see it. Pun intended.
I had the same. That seems like something like you do in a botched ritual, but also like to what extent does the Vecna still torment? Like, why? That's part of the question I have about the 50s situation. Is like, why did the Vecna stop? He consumed an entire family. He left one victim get away. And was he taken to a mental institution that's just outside? Because they keep on talking about this being a home of evil. That's evil needs a home. This evil is always there, is skulking around the shadows, the corners, the deep places of Hawkins in this home. It could be that he's like physically bound to the land.
It could be
that there is something, and I think they even noted that there's something about the thinness of the walls between the dimensions here, spatially in Hawkins. I imagine that'll be part of the answers we get. But yeah, I didn't quite understand because yeah, you're right. That's the least of it. It's like oh, they stopped the bleeding. I'm like, can you bleed to death from your eyes being slashed open? Like,
there's definitely a part of your body you can bleed to death from slashing open, and it ain't your eyes.
I mean, gouging eyes out has been like, you know, millennial old non-lethal punishment.
Right. I don't know. Maybe he was trying to join them wherever they went because, like, you know, when it happens to you, your eyes get sucked out or whatever. Maybe he was like, okay, if I can repeat this ritual somehow myself, I can get to where they are.
I can make it. Yeah, I can. Yeah. And I'd rather be in their hell than still alive without them.
Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting. Sense. I think the other thing is I'm looking to see how the Russian stuff connects to this, because right now they're very much separate, but we know that the Russians are on to the stuff that's happening with the Upside Down. And could they have possibly been part of what opened it up in the 1950s? In Hawkins? I don't know. I don't know how that would work, but
you think it'll be some kind of time? Will it be some kind of time travel thing where like Elle and Hopper and everybody goes back to the '50s to stop the Vecna, which starts the Vecna, and it's just this nice little loop, self-contained loop that they're going to create?
That'd be interesting.
Does it connect to possibility? Does it connect to Elle killing the entire laboratory with her mind and Dr. Brenner saying, "What have you done?"
Yeah.
Like, did she do something that not just opens up a portal to the next dimension, but also opens up a portal front to back? The other question I had
could be,
is the Vecna's throne world, or whatever the hell you want to call it, does not look like traditional representations of the Upside Down.
Yeah.
Like this blood red, more tentacly than viney. And I know it's subtle differences, but like, I wonder if the Vecna is actually outside the Demogorgons. like if Elle opened up a portal between our world and there, did she knock any other portals? And is the Upside Down being taken over by stronger, more evil forces? Like, does she start an extra dimensional war? I'm trying to connect all this back to the initial scene of mm-hmm. little Elle causing wreaking so much havoc.
And we do see. Yeah. So we do see Vecna in what I would classify as the Upside Down with all the, you know, floaties and everything. But that's like Vecna's POV, right? Like, right. We're in the place with Vecna, and it's he's not like a mind fucking anybody, right? But when he's inside someone's head, it looks very different. It looks like this red hellscape.
And I guess that's the other explanation going the other way. It's like, well, this isn't his reality. This is what he's making someone else see. Yeah. But it also seems like what Max saw and that blood red thing is like, that's the Victor Creel home kind of pulled apart and orbiting mm-hmm. this vampire type landscape, just covered in like blood and vessels and.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I do feel less bad about them spoiling the Vecna, because he is like just one of the many horrific things that you see this season. Mm-hmm. Like Fred and Chrissy, like all alien styled, resined up, and you know their little spike that he's, I guess, still draining them at the. I don't know. I wonder if we'll see Victor Creel's family still there too.
Could be. I don't think any songs are bringing them back though.
No, they don't. They just don't. That's because they don't like pop music today.
It's true.
You're not going to find Ella Fitzgerald rolling around in Steve's tape collection, I don't think.
No. Nope.
Oh, speaking of Steve, I like Steve with another improvised melee weapon. He just grabs the ubiquitous brass lamp that everyone's mom or dad had at some point in their house and mm-hmm. went to go almost beat the crap out of Lucas with it. What is going to be his signature improvised melee weapon? Is he going to keep the brass lamp? Is he going to go to something more Mad Max? Classic baseball bat?
I mean, he could go with a skateboard. It's right around the time where like a good long board would probably be effective.
Sure.
Especially now that you got characters out in California. Yeah, let's get Steve out to California.
Get him on a skateboard. Get him beating people with trucks. Beating people mm-hmm. to death with trucks and wheels.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The other thing that I had noticed what a dick Mike was being in the last episode.
Sure.
And I wanted to switch over to that for a second, because I thought this was a really strong episode for Mike and Will, especially Will. Will is such a good friend. Will just wants the group together. Will just wants to hang out with his friends and for everything to be cool. And so he's like willing to overlook Mike being a dick to him. And sit with Mike when Mike is having troubles, right? And then listen to him talk about, you know, the problems he's having. And I thought that was just like so generous of Will after Mike was an asshole to him.
I thought it was interesting Mike describing him and Elle's fight as more adult, like something like, you know, it's not just a bickering fight. It's a fight maybe that you said things you can't come back from. I don't know, because I was wondering myself, is like, is Will being a good friend, or is Will just have extremely low self-esteem? And because like, is Mike better because he realizes that he's been a shit friend to Will, or is Elle just not there for him to obsess over?
Yeah, and this is what you always got to wonder with Mike. I feel like he's been
that kind of guy. Yeah, like maybe I thought maybe, but they're kids. That's the other thing. It's like I'm trying to judge these guys like they're 35-year-old, you know, but they're kids, and Will's been through a lot. Yeah. I liked Will's point because, like, obviously the kids get assigned these federal agent babysitters. You know, Joyce and Hopper, people that they trust implicitly, can't keep them to stand in one spot. What are these? So we know they're going to. But I like Will's point about, like, well, I trust Paul Reiser, even though I can't believe I'm saying it. But even when he was, you know, the good guy helping us out, he didn't save us. It was we saved ourselves. You guys saved me. Elle saved me. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting that they're giving these kids like they're, you know, a good reason not to stay sit to rebel against their adult captors. I do wonder because they're being real coy about Elle, like where she is, what they're doing to her. The process might take weeks, might take months of strengthening her psionic abilities. How do you feel about how that's going?
I really don't know. I mean, we're not given any kind of real look into it. I assume that's coming next episode. We'll get to sit with Elle for a little while she undergoes this new training. But yeah, for now, I'm up in the air on it.
I guess I liked Max's dealing with her mother. I thought that was pretty good. I don't know about the. It seems such a little kid solution to leave these letters to everybody in case something happens. What are the odds that those letters get open and read before she dies, especially now that she survived the Vecna?
Almost certainly. Like I don't know, because I'm trying to figure out what's real and what isn't here. Her mom was clearly Vecna at some point, and I don't know when that happened. Like, did she actually leave letters? I'm not totally sure.
Because I think she went in and left the letters, and she went because the way I perceive these Vecna events is like when Fred was talking to the sheriff. I think the sheriff was there, but the Vecna just like used that to start to pick on, and it brought on a vision, and he snapped back. I don't think the Vecna ever possessed that sheriff. So I think her mom was standing out there, you know, hanging up clothes on the line. And I liked how smoothly it switched to her comforting her and say, everything's going to be OK.
And the clouds rolling.
Nothing's going to happen bad except for the things you deserve. And then now the clothes are dripping with blood and all that kind of shit. I think her mom was there. And like, if that happened to me, if like my kid just wigged out in the middle of hugging me and said she left a whole bunch of suicide notes, very first thing I'm doing is stomping in there and opening letters and seeing what they have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they will get opened. I like that stuff a lot. I think it's the kid's way to solve a problem here, but I think like it's as good a way as any, right? If you have stuff you need to tell your friends and family and you think you're dead in 24 hours, leave them notes. Yeah, that's the only thing you can do, really. But like, even if it is a kid's solution to this problem, I think that works with this show, right? They always have kid's solutions to problems. And that's part of the charm of it, is the kid's solution to problems always ends up working.
And it's another crazy complication because they've already got the varsity high school team looking for them out for blood. Mm-hmm. And now they understand that Lucas is a turncoat, or at least they believe him to be. Max, if her mom goes and reads all this creepy, crazy suicide sounding stuff, she's going to call the cops. Cops are already on high alert to try to figure out what's going on in this town. The kids are going to be wanted by the police. Going to be wanted by the varsity basketball team. Like they're going to be permanently on the lam for the rest of the season, which is, I think, when this show operates best, you know, when the kids are kind of cut off and having to kind of improvise on their own. So I'm interested in seeing where that goes, because it does seem like it's just another complication for them.
Yeah, I'm wondering how they'll all get back together, because you've got some in California, you've got some in Alaska, you've got some in Russia. It seems a big ask to get them all back together, but the show always does that, right?
Yeah. And I don't know, because it might be fun. Every time something fun begins to happen, like Steve starts needling Dustin, like they go on to something different, because these kids are almost like the stakes are too high for them to start goofing around. I think the fun's going to come with Argyle. Now the Argyle, who's the pineapple pizza delivery guy, the stoner. Oh,
yes.
Now that Argyle is in the mix and providing Uber services, I think the show is going to have finally a goofy straight man that they can play off like they have so well in seasons before. The older kids used to be that straight kid, and then like Max and Billy was. I think they'll get Argyle going. Argyle seems like a really solid straight man, and the fact that he's not straight at all,
right? Yeah, but he's not in on it, right? He's like the outsider who can think all this stuff is crazy, and yeah,
I do wonder why all this, because on one hand I'm glad that the Russian stuff isn't going to be so simple to resolve, but on the other hand, like, now I don't see how the hell they ever get Hopper out of there, because he's already tried to escape. His guard, which I assume is a big enough role that he's not going to go away. Like, he's going to be him and his guard, and him and Enzo and Yuri are going to still get. I'm not seeing how they're going to get Hopper out of the USSR without introducing new parts. And I guess maybe that will be frustrating if I feel like that they spent 2.5 episodes doing something that was just stalling for time until they did the other thing.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly. I think it's going to come down to, well, you're going to have to get Murray and Joyce on a plane to Russia, right? So Yuri's probably just going to fly them over there. But on the way, they're probably going to end up stealing his plane, like taking over his plane. I would love to see a scene of Murray trying to pilot a plane.
Murray might be able to. Murray is a Renaissance man. Murray knows Kung Fu.
But like,
Murray knows Russian encryption.
Borderline, right? Murray thinks he knows a lot, and he actually does know quite a bit, but I think there are limits to his, like,
sure,
book knowledge and his practical knowledge, where those things butt up against each other could be hilarious.
Yeah, I could see that being really funny.
So I kind of hope that's what happens, and then I don't know how they land and get Hopper, but you know, something's got to give there. You're right.
Yeah. I did like that scene where Hopper arrives at Yuri's smuggler storage depot, the land of Levi's and camels and peanut butter, and he's like, feels happy and safe for the first time in God knows how long, probably since last summer began. And it doesn't last very long, but it's just nice to see Hopper not a scared animal for 2 seconds.
Yeah, being in peanut butter heaven for a little bit. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah, if you just had Russian gulag food, oh man, a can of chiff. It's got to taste like cotton candy. I'm trying to think if there's anything in that, like, because I was looking at what Victor told Nancy and Robin, and I mean, all the parts are there, like, you know, the trauma, the guilt that he was feeling. It seems like Vecna like really excels in homing in on is some existing sense of guilt and shame. That's been a requirement for all of them. And also, I guess we're in new territory, because this has been like a ring situation that 6 days after you start, you know, getting these ghostly visitations and these visions, you die. And Max was like bang on schedule for that, and she was able to survive. The only other example we have of someone surviving the Vecna just essentially lives forever. You know, is allowed to complete their natural life. So it seemed like the Vecna was pissed. Like, he was pulling out all the stops to try to keep her there. Like, you know, and I also wondered, like, how much of that was real? Like, if one of those bricks had hit her when she'd have died, like, what does that even mean? Is that just his psychic strength against hers? What does that tell us about Max?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or was that just illusion to try to break her will and resistance? I got a lot of questions about that, but like, I'm kind of with you. It was remarkable how little information we got out of Victor other than the music thing.
Yeah, it was nice to see his backstory and how that all happened to him with his family and stuff. But yeah, he didn't seem to know much, right? Which I guess sort of makes sense too.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the scene with Max and Billy's grave. The fact that, you know, we'd surmise this with the flashbacks, but that she feels just really guilty. That Billy died essentially a hero, and she can't tell anybody about that. And also that she feels deep down that she's a little guilty that she didn't try to do anything heroic to save him. And the follow-on guilt that if she had, her saving her brother and her and the brother saving her would have forged them into a fast friendship and they could have healed all their family. Like, there's all this stuff that goes on top of that realization. Mm-hmm. But it went a long way to explaining why Max is just got the life drained out of her this year.
Yeah.
You know, why she things have gone bad. Cause like, she just feels like she's the reason that everything's gone to shit.
Yeah. And I can see a path forward for her as well. Getting right with the death of Billy can be the thing that can, you know, permanently save her from Vecna. But she's not quite there yet. Cause I do think like when Billy, you know, Vecna Billy comes up to her and is like, there's some small part of you that's relieved I'm dead. I think that might be true. I think that should be true. Honestly, he was a shit to her. He was a terrible older brother. I think it would be right of her to feel a little bit of relief there too.
Yeah,
it's a complicated thing, you know. It's
not, because people don't feel all one thing.
No,
you know? It's usually a lot, you know.
Yeah, so he's probably right about that, and I think that's maybe the thing that she needs to own up to, and then, you know, overcome and then sort of just like get right with the death of her brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll see.
But she's, yeah, she, they did a little bit of a fake out. Cause I thought I was about to throw my remote when she's running for safety, fade for black. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. I know I can just hit next episode, except for I got to record a fucking podcast first, but I was like, oh, come on. But I was glad to see they didn't do the cheap cliffhanger.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
Because again, the interesting thing is not whether Max lives or dies, it's now what. So,
yeah.
And now we get to find now what. Do you have anything else you want to talk about, or should we get back to our watch?
No, I think that's it.
Cool. Again, StrangerThings@BaldMove.com. If we miss something, if you want to be the 479th person to tell us that Enzo is Jack and Hagar, we accept all that stuff at StrangerThings@BaldMove.com. Again, we're holding all of our feedback until next week when we can do a season 4A wrap up and get our best speculation and guesses on what's going to happen next month when the Stranger Things comes back July 4th weekend. But yeah, we're going to get back to our watch. We got one more episode today and then we're going to finish up the mammoth supersize episodes of Stranger Things tomorrow. We'll see you in the next one.